The Sims 3 breaks record sales. I'm dyslexic.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 180 for Thursday, June 18th, 2009. On today's show, America's Army 3.0 invades, the Sims 3 breaks sales records, LucasArts says there might be more where Monkey Island came from, Ghostbusters PC leaves out the multiplayer, Oblivion and Bioshock form a dream team, and listener questions and more. Greetings all, I'm your host, PC Gamer's Reviews Editor, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are our Executive Editor, Logan Decker, who has been replaced by some kind of terrier. Playing the part of Logan Decker today will be his understudy, a terrier.
That was a bigger dog than a terrier.
I don't think that it was. Our Previews Editor, Evan Lottie.
Can I be a corgi? Is that cool?
Well, you're going to have to work on your corgi impression.
Right. Somebody asked to be a corgi.
Our young, impressionable intern, Max McGee.
I've got a really old chihuahua back home who sleeps on the couch all day and has seizures.
Don't chihuahuas have a lifespan of about 15 minutes?
Well, I guess I got one of the special extended life chihuahuas.
I've never seen a chihuahua that didn't look like it wasn't having a seizure.
It was awful. It'll like fall down and foam at the mouth, and you have to scoop it up in a blanket and just cradle it until it finally calms down.
That's me every weekend.
Now you're making us feel bad about making fun of an obviously very ill dog.
Oh, I don't think she listens to this podcast, so it'll be all right.
If he pooped on the sidewalk, he had it coming.
But PETA might be listening. Ooh. That's the problem. Mm. I think we have a strong PETA following.
Let's swat down that dog.
Right.
Got him.
And our producer, Andy Bauman.
Hi, guys.
Together, we are Team PC Gamer Podcast. PCG powers activate.
Go.
Whoa!
And deactivate.
Maybe turn it off. That's that. Okay. So, first of all, sorry, everybody, about the malware alerts on our podcast site. Somehow, some evil person out there hacked it and inserted some kind of malicious code in there. And we think we've managed to exercise all that code, with human sacrifice. You notice our intern Josh is not here. We needed his blood.
Extensive bloodletting.
Oh, right, man, right. Have you guys seen Drag Me to Hell?
Shockingly, no.
It was awesome.
It was so good. It reminds me of that.
It was truly awesome, yeah.
It's like the sacrifice. He's like, I don't want your sacrifice.
What was there a Google malware alert in that?
No, but a dead... It's kind of the same.
Okay.
Oh.
It's kind of the same. Okay, that was such a spoiler.
I'll cut it up.
This is PETA's favorite show so far. So anyway, we think we've managed to get the code out of there, but Google is still throwing up warnings because they haven't figured that out yet. We're hoping to get that straightened out and hopefully tighten the security on our site, because apparently we had no idea we were a target. Anybody cared that much about us to hack us? That's crazy. Yeah. But you know, until then, you can just click through the warnings to listen to the podcast, which I guess you must have in order to hear this now, or I guess you could be listening through iTunes. Yeah, iTunes is still a safe way to get it. Yesterday, America's Army launched an invasion of the internets with the 3.0 version of the Army's free shooter, which this one is based on Unreal Engine 3, so it's all fancy looking. Evan and Max, you've been playing with it, right?
Well, we've been trying to.
Yeah, they tried to launch an invasion.
Was this invasion better handled than the invasion of Iraq? I guess the invasion itself went okay. It was the occupation. So
man, we're slipping into political humor territory. These are dangerous waters.
Yeah, I think everyone can acknowledge that the invasion of Iraq went very well, but this invasion does not seem to have gone very well.
Yeah, I don't want to pass judgment too quickly, but the launch does not seem to be going too smoothly. A lot of people are complaining that they can't log in at all. They can't create new accounts. They can't even play offline because basically the offline options are this training mode that's very sort of rigid. You have to play through certain segments of it. In order to advance, you have to connect to an authentication server, which is apparently still down as of this morning. I hit them up for an official response just to see what's going on, and they haven't gotten back to us yet. So,
well, this is the United States government. I mean, this is why we hope they don't socialize game developers.
Indeed.
yesterday they launched it through Steam and through their, I guess, their own servers. I think BigDownload.com had like an exclusive downloader thing. I couldn't download it off Steam all day yesterday. It was too packed. So I guess they may have underestimated the eagerness for people to get their hands on a free Unreal 3 powered shooter.
It is the only free game on Steam, and that's a nice boost.
Is it?
Really?
As far as I know. Do you guys know of any others?
I don't know
you
of
think
any
others. There'd be something else.
I don't think so.
I think you may be right.
That would be a first. okay. Well, that's a distinction.
Yeah, you really had to crowbar your way into that game to get a download on it from out of Steam.
But I've seen both of you actually playing it so far.
Yeah, I was able to get into the first training section of the offline mode. It's basically it's an obstacle course. It just kind of teaches you how to use the movement controls and whatnot. But even though I got an excellent time, it still failed me because the authentication server is down. So I can't really advance to using guns and whatnot. Which is
Evan
a shame.
Evan is a failure.
I am.
I saw Max shooting something.
Yeah, I think if you're playing in just offline mode, you have access to all four of those different training modes. Because, like, I kept doing the Fit to Win obstacle course, and I ran that obstacle course like 30 times, and it wouldn't pass me. So I just decided I'll just try to get into one of the other ones. And yeah, I was able to get into the shooting range and the obstacle course that has where you're doing the live fire against targets.
But it's obviously you haven't gotten to the actual gameplay of it yet. But how does it look so far? I mean, is it way above and beyond what you'd expect from a free shooter, or is it about what you'd expect?
In terms of a free shooter, it does look very nice. It looks about on the level as like the Hunter that I talked about a couple episodes ago.
That's also a free game though.
Yes,
but I mean, relative to a game that you'd pay $50 for.
It doesn't look nearly as good as a game you'd pay full price for, but at the same time, I mean, it's not bad.
Right, yeah. I doubt it looks bad. I'm just wondering how it stacks up, because I haven't actually seen it in action other than looking over your shoulder.
When they were still in beta, when I ran up to Emeryville, just north of us here, to play it at their studio, I mean, it felt pretty reasonable. It's sort of like a more accessible Arma with the very like conventional level design of a game like Counter-Strike, where, you know, big long choke points and just like very familiar feeling level design. I mean, the thing that stuck out most to me was the audio was really, really strong. I mean, these guys have access to all the real weapons and equipment and, you know, testing areas, so they really took advantage of that. And when you're playing, you could really tell the difference between a bullet that was fired, you know, 3 feet away from your head and 30 feet away from your head. Just had this different like echo and snap to it. So that was a nice aspect of it. And I'm always a fan of games with a really robust ranking system, which this one definitely has too. It's kind of goofy because they build in like the army values as part of the ranking system. Like you rank up your loyalty and duty and respect and honor and integrity, I guess.
And I do remember in America's Army 2, they would throw you in jail if you shot your superior officer during training.
And
that's a very strong value of the American Army, is you do not shoot superior officers.
Indeed. I mean, another thing that kind of stuck out to me, and this is, I don't know, you can kind of deconstruct this in some weird philosophical way if you really want, but so in multiplayer, it's 13 on 13. You have a commander and there's fire teams of four under him, but you see yourself as an American soldier, and so does the other team. They see themselves as an American soldier, but you see your enemy as basically, you know, a terrorist or an insurgent. So you're both playing as the army, seeing each other as the enemy. It's just kind of a weird mechanic, I thought, in way of solving that issue.
Well, it kind of makes sense. I mean, the army wouldn't want to develop a game that has people playing as terrorists.
Of course, yeah.
That would not go over well.
It's just like a really funny little loophole they had to jump through to, like, so it's like, who are the real terrorists? We are all the terrorists, and simultaneously the army. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. Anyway.
Well, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? I can just imagine that, you know, it must have been hard enough for the army to get funding for this game, saying, you know, people so you want to spend taxpayer money developing a video game? It's like, wait, no, we've got a good idea. We can do this. And then, you know, if they wanted to do with actual, you know, American and non-American sides, it's like, you want to spend taxpayer money to let people play as what? So I'm sure that probably came up at some point.
Yeah. I mean, something a lot of people don't realize is the developer, I mean, they're all DoD contractors, essentially. They're not some separate third-party developer that the Army just happened to hire. I mean, they're employed by the American government. So, yep.
That's you have to wonder. I mean, we've never actually heard how effective they perceive the America's Army game program as being in terms of raising awareness or recruitment or whatever it is it's trying to do.
Yeah, they haven't quoted exact numbers, but they like to mention that 11 million people have played the first two games, which, you know, seems significant, I guess.
11 million people is a significant figure, yes. I wonder how many of them are actually American.
True, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's always nice to have another free game out there, you know, high quality or relatively high quality free game. It's hard to spit on, even if it does have launch problems. It's like, I want my money back. Yeah, okay.
You know, I mean, I think, I don't know, I think maybe, you know, to buy all the servers you'd require, you know, to make a launch go absolutely seamlessly, maybe it's just not cost, you know, effective, and they just figure, okay, there are going to be launch problems, and, you know, if you log in, just like everyone who wanted to the iPhone update yesterday, you know, if you want it on the first 3 hours, you're going to have problems. Just face it. You know, it's going to brick your phone because you can't activate or whatever. And, because, you know, I mean, if you expect everything to happen right off the bat, then prices go up, right? Because they have to buy all these other servers and stuff like that. So I wouldn't, you know, I would be hesitant to hold it against them for the first week. I mean, I know that technically that's how it's supposed to work. And, you know, Demigod had problems and it's, you know, really should work on the first day, but, you know, I think we can give them a week's grace period, you know.
It's especially forgivable for a free game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah.
I think we could all wait, you know, a week or so to play the Army's, you know, brainwashing simulator. my favorite thing. My favorite thing about the game watching yesterday was I was watching Max play it for a couple seconds. And I was standing behind him watching it, and Gary was sitting, you know, 20 feet away. At his desk, and I was saying, wow, I can't believe they built in an entire Ahmadinejad assassination mission in here. That's crazy. I don't believe they did that, and I totally had him believing it for several minutes. So moving on a little bit. EA is very, very pleased with the results of the Sims 3 launch, which apparently went much better than America's Army. Even though the game is being pirated, you know, all over the place, because, you know, probably, and I'd say due in part to it having reduced DRM restrictions, except Spore had all kinds of crazy DRM restrictions, and it was pirated right and left too. So inevitably it was going to be pirated a lot. But EA put out a press release saying that they had sold 1.4 million units of the million copies of the game in the first week, which makes it EA's best ever PC launch. Which, yeah, nothing to sneeze at there, and that's in spite of the piracy. So, and it's kind of hard for them to claim, you know, with a straight face. I'm sure they'll still claim it, but they hard for them to claim that the piracy is going to make it impossible for them to sell games, because obviously it's not, if they're breaking records.
But it's pretty impressive. I was able to track down that Sims 2 sold 1 million within 10 days. And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, that's without Sims 3 being distributed digitally.
You can't download it. Let's see. I think that might be including the digital distribution.
Okay. I mean, but, either way, I didn't really get the sense. I mean, there was some outdoor advertising. I saw some trailer advertising online, but there wasn't really a mainstream push that I saw, at least, for SimCity marketing.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't been springing for TV ads, or maybe they have. I don't watch a whole lot of I just watch Hulu these days. So, but there have been no ads on Hulu. No, I'm kind of surprised that with a game like that, they wouldn't spring for a TV ad or two. But we have seen a billboard ad that's been up for the last like 2 months on Highway 101 right near San Francisco. Yep. So that ain't nothing. But I mean, awareness is obviously pretty high if they're selling 1.4 million units in the first week.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because like I sort of didn't even remember when The Sims was coming out, and all of a sudden there's all these press releases saying it's the biggest selling PC game ever, and I'm thinking,
well, it's not the biggest selling PC game ever. It's the fastest selling EA PC game.
Right? Oh, okay. Press releases and their silly verbiage.
Yeah, I would be surprised if like The Burning Crusade didn't sell more than this. In fact, I'm pretty sure it did.
Oh, okay.
It came out the Tuesday of E3, so there's a lot of news happening then, obviously.
That's probably why I just completely missed it.
Mm-hmm.
They should do a promo with hiring people to walk around with those diamonds over their heads around the streets, you know? Do, 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 do.
Yeah, that would actually be pretty cool.
Probably more effective than cats running around with fear, too.
Viral.
Yeah.
but not as cute.
But not as nearly effective. As adorable.
Probably not as effective as the protesters they hired for Dante's Inferno.
Oh, right.
That was genius.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait. You're telling me that those were hired?
They were. It was a marketing scheme.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but then the fake protest spawned a real protest, didn't it? I remember seeing that headline.
I'm guessing there's people who just sort of joined in.
It wasn't like a real... No, it was like people complaining that you know, it was defaming Christians or whatever to have... You know, protesters of a game about hell as a marketing scheme, which, you know, if you do something enough times, it's really not. Anyway, there are crazy people out there is the long and short of it.
But when Bruno's butt went into their faces, that part was real. That had not been scripted.
Right. The Sims is not traditionally what you see as a, you know, hardcore PC game, but at the same time, it's, you know, very much a PC game. So, and you know, I reviewed it. I loved it. So, I mean, it's not something that I like really see myself actively going out and seeking out and grabbing and playing. But when I do have it, I get in there and I you know, it just keeps you locked in for a while. There's so much to do, between all the different modes, and it doesn't make you do anything you don't want to. And every part of it is so well fleshed out. It's very impressive. So I mean if they haven't put out a demo yet, but if they do, I strongly suggest testing it out. If you've never played a Sims game, or if you played like The Sims 1 and didn't like how boxed in you felt, it's really a dramatic improvement over that. So it's, yeah, worth trying out if you're for both Sims fans and non-Sims fans alike. There's really no way to segue from The Sims to Monkey Island, is there? Anyone got an idea? No?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get people to work on that for a while.
Yeah, there are no monkeys in The Sims. So even The Sims 2 pets, there were no monkeys. I don't think. So going from Sims 2 to Monkey Island, LucasArts on Shack News, they've quoted some LucasArts community manager as saying that if the new Monkey Island games come out and sell well, then quote, there is no one at this company who doesn't want to do these games. So there is hope of re-releasing, you know, a bunch of old classic LucasArts games with the updated graphics and possibly, you know, more to come with old games like Day of the Tentacle, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, Full Throttle, Grim Fandango, and all the classic ones that we would love to see come back. So I guess the moral of the story is buy Monkey Island when it comes out.
I know. Why don't they, like, how about hiring somebody to tell some new stories, you know, like, well, they find the next Tim Schafer, you know?
Well, they are. I mean, that's what Telltale is doing with Monkey Island.
Yeah.
And just to clarify this for anybody that got confused in the announcement. So, yeah, there are two Monkey Island games being made. The new episodes, which are planned on a monthly basis from Telltale, start July 7th. And that's using their proprietary 3D technology. It's not the same kind of 2D tech. And LucasArts is remaking The Secret of Monkey Island. It's called The Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition. I don't have an exact date on that, but it's still Q3 for sure. And I mean, it looked great at E3. I mean, basically, the best thing about it is really that you can switch between an updated visual style with like this painterly art design and the old visuals anytime you want. So that's kind of a nice little treat for fans of the game.
Yeah, people who remember the old style and want to play it that way, or just want to flip back and forth. It's a really cool little, you know, nostalgic feature.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to see like Full Throttle and like all those old games, to see them remastered, and you know, for people to enjoy now, even if they didn't you know, make new stuff, because you know, who knows if the new stuff would live up to the old stuff. So but the old ones, you know, the fact that you have to go through a bunch of emulators and jump through all kinds of hoops to get them to work, you know, really, I'd rather see them, you know, more accessible so that a new generation of gamers might enjoy them.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'd say as they're like developing a competency for remastering 2D art, I would expect them to go after those games, not something like Grim Fandango first, if that's the case.
Maybe a little while down the line, they'll go back and take this Ghostbusters game that came out on PC just recently and put in the multiplayer that was just left out of the PC version. The Xbox and PlayStation 3 versions, and I guess the PlayStation 2 version, all have co-op multiplayer, but the PC version does not have it. And BigDownload.com got a little bit of information out of them, out of Three Wave Software, the developers, who said multiplayer for the PC version of Ghostbusters is something that Three Wave and Terminal Reality, I guess Three Wave are the guys that did the multiplayer portion of the game. Terminal Reality did the single player. So multiplayer for the PC version of Ghostbusters is something that Three Wave and Terminal Reality always wanted to do. However, the focus was on making the console version the best they could be, an experience that allows multiple players to relive. Basically, the gist of it is they put their resources on the console version because that's where they figured they're going to sell more copies. And to be fair, they're kind of right. The downside is PC gamers don't get the co-op multiplayer. On the bright side, the PC version costs $30. So I mean, is that a fair transaction? Would you say like a reduced price for just a single player part of the game?
Sure, but everybody thinks when they think Ghostbusters, they think co-op.
Right. I mean, it is kind of a game built for co-op. The fiction is built for co-op.
Yeah.
Although, and it's $30 for just the single player game and the promise of future multiplayer.
I don't think they've promised anything.
Yeah, they haven't promised anything.
They didn't mention that in the story. Not I thought sure. I saw it. I guess I'm just making stuff up.
Would you rather have it now for this price, or would you rather wait 3 or 4 months, have the full package, $40 or $50?
Yeah, I think I'd rather wait. My position is generally I'd rather wait for a polished, completed game with as much content as possible than have it now and have, you know, things missing or broken.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm with you.
There's plenty to do at home.
Right. There are so many games out already that, I mean, like, especially in the last year or so, there are so many games I haven't even had time to play. And for Ghostbusters fans, obviously, you know, there's a lot of anticipation. You want it right now. We want it yesterday. But you know, I think waiting for it to be done right, I think is the better way to do it. And at least they didn't cut out the multiplayer and charge full price for it. I think that's a kind of a classic.
Oh yeah, that would have been. Ooh.
Yeah, and that kind of thing has been done before. I mean, where we've gotten the PC has gotten a version of a game that's that doesn't have full functionality and still charge $50 for it. That's not cool. But the game itself, by all accounts, is, you know, very funny and like the writing, you know, at least does some justice to the original source material, and they've got all of the original casts except for Sigourney Weaver. I am looking forward to playing the single player version. I mean, I don't know how much co-op I'd really want to play in that game anyway. It seems like more or less of a one-trick pony.
The gist of it is that you don't actually play through the story in co-op mode anyway.
Right. They have separate co-op scenarios.
Yeah, it's mostly just like a ghost hunting mode or something, you know, equivalent to the horde mode, I guess. Right. This is all coming off of like OXMonline.com. So, of course, everything's like related back to Gears of War.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, it's not it's a different thing from the campaign, which is part of why they had two developers working on it.
Yeah, but I mean, so are you really missing that much by not having the co-op? Probably not.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're missing something. I mean, all the replayability value is there. There's probably not. I mean, from reading about the single player game, I just read our review that came in, but it's a very linear game, so the replay value is going to be minimal without any multiplayer. Speaking of replay value, Oblivion and BioShock, two games that have very little in common except that they're great. And that they were published by 2K, have been packaged together in a bundle, for $30. You can get both BioShock 1 and Oblivion, which is not a bad deal at all.
That's crazy talk.
That's a lot of hours of gaming.
Mostly
on the Oblivion side.
Yeah. And BioShock is a good, 15 hours maybe?
Totally.
Yeah. And that's another one that's single player only, but, and pretty linear, but very well done.
But yeah, but fantastic.
Yeah. Whereas Oblivion, wide open, not at all linear, huge amount of replay value, tons of mods out there for it that can totally change the way the game plays. You can easily spend 100 hours in that without a problem. It's, I guess the map in there is bigger than it was in Fallout, or than Fallout 3's map. So yeah, there's a lot of territory to cover. I guess the only downside is that the Oblivion in here does not include the DLC and like the Shivering Isles expansion. So which I guess you can get off Steam too. They just put Oblivion on Steam with like the Game of the Year edition. So it has all of the DLC and add-ons in there. So if you've already got BioShock and you want to get Oblivion, that's a good way to go.
But yeah, this great is the value. Deal where you don't have to worry about your gaming being rationed.
Yeah, it's a great deal. If you haven't checked out either of those games or one or the other, you definitely should. All right, so with that, let's move on to some listener questions.
Hi, PC Gamer. This is Chris from Cleveland. With LAN party season in full swing, I was wondering, what would you say is the best LAN party you've been to? My favorite LAN party every year is Million Man LAN. They always know how to have fun, whether it's on or off the PC. You can always have fun with a roll of duct tape. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Is there a LAN party season? I thought that was
year round.
It's got to be Showdown LAN for me.
Yeah, that is definitely the best one I've been to since I haven't been to that many of them. I guess QuakeCon I've also heard a lot of good things about.
Man, I want to get more into the LAN scene. It's just I don't have the time, really.
Does it start with a cotillion, you know? I mean,
there's a torch
kickoff period. Getting involved in a LAN and a little tournament is just so fun.
Right. But I guess it does make sense for there to be a LAN season considering it's summer, kids are out of school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely at its best when you and maybe four or five friends are all bringing your PCs, you sit in the same area, and yeah, you're competing in those tournaments, but maybe you have like one or two of like your sort of group's games, like even if they're older games that you play together, and just having people walk by and see what you're playing and enjoying that's really where the value is for me, mm-hmm. kind of crafting your own little hub.
And apparently there's a significant entertainment value with duct tape as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I was not the one in 2007, but didn't we have like a power supply tossing contest, like Olympic style?
Oh yeah,
there was. Yes,
that could have ended badly.
Yeah, yeah. We were cringing that whole time. It's like, don't sue.
Yeah, we need some waivers.
Yeah,
I remember like a billion years ago, I used to live in this house with a bunch of other people, and there were just PCs everywhere. So every night when everybody came home, there would always be a match before dinner, hear screaming and yelling and then everybody went off and did their thing. It was like a LAN party every night, it was fantastic.
And just so I know, somebody's going to ask, we don't currently have any information about future Showdown LAN plans, but when we do, we'll share it with you.
That seems like a good spot to put in a new question.
It does. Seems like a
Correct.
Like a silence that should be filled by a question.
Hi, my name's John, North Carolina. I was a little too long-winded on a previous message, so I'm going to try to shorten it up. I'm a little concerned about StarCraft II. I've read the article in the most recent issue of your mag. The graphics, to me, consistently have been uninspiring at best. The gameplay from Blizzard's, what they've given out so far, doesn't sound like there's any new advances for more modern RTSs, or even the original StarCraft. According to the article, it still seems to be the same. Build a base, find new resources, expand the base, rinse, repeat, thing that we've seen and kind of been rejected by more modern RTS games. And it seems like a big part of the deal is still the South Korea obsession. They could be wrong. The Germans are wrong about David Hasselhoff, the French about Jerry Lewis, the Japanese about all sorts of stuff. Is StarCraft a little overrated, maybe? Just interested in your guys' thoughts. Thanks.
I think Blizzard is definitely taking if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of attitude towards it. I mean, StarCraft didn't become like one of the most beloved games, you know, of all time without you know, some appeal to where, you know, to the mechanics they had established for it. And I mean, so it's not trying to reinvent the wheel. It's trying to refine. It's trying to introduce some new mechanics to it without straying too far from what their successful formula was. So I see what you're saying in that it's not a revolutionary game by any means, but it is a very well crafted one.
Do you think you could argue that the resource gathering in StarCraft was already better than it was in games like Red Alert? Not the newest one, but maybe Red Alert 2, games of that era, because it sort of introduced its own tactical workarounds with the workers and the way that you mine stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it was essentially the same system.
It was, but it was sort of executed differently. It was more like how in Red Alert 3, your miner just goes a really short distance into the mine and comes back to the thing. It was kind of like...
Well, I mean, that all depends on where you build your base, whereas in Red Alert 3, you're forced to build your mining structure on top of a mine thing, and then it'll run back and forth, whereas in StarCraft, your workers would automatically run between the resources that you send them to and your base, so in your actual base structure, like your main headquarters or command structure, I guess.
Yeah.
So that trip was as long as you made it, based on where you built.
True, but then you had to when you expanded, you had to have at least defenses, and you didn't want them running across the whole map, right? So
right,
you had to build something close by.
Right, and you had the same exact system in Red Alert 2, and every Command and Conquer up to Red Alert 3. Which is harvesters that go out from their structure, which is not your main base structure, but their structure. So that's slightly different. But they go out from there, they go to the resources, and they come back. It's exactly the same system. The only difference is with StarCraft, there are a bunch of resource collectors instead of just a few bigger ones. So I wouldn't say that it's a better system. I would say that that Blizzard nailed a formula that you know there are very like a lot of factors that go into these, you know, varying from how fast the collectors pick up resources, how much they can carry, how fast they move back to their home base, how and all kinds of things. Can more than one be harvesting from one piece of crystal at the same time? They found a good balance that people really, you know, were able to understand easily and maximize without you know being too hard. So they did a very good job with it. I'll say that. He's also talking about modern RTS design. It is trying to get away from the old style thing. I mean, you just look at Dawn of War 2. It doesn't do any real resource harvesting. It's all about capturing and controlling points or you know map points. I guess there is some you know the resources accumulate, but and then you look at something like World in Conflict, which has no resource management at all. Basically, the trend has been away from resource management, but some you know some do like to throw it back, and they like the old style. And like I said, the you know StarCraft would alienate a bunch of people. StarCraft II would alienate a bunch of people if they didn't keep the vast majority of their old mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the shelf life of that game, they're in a position where they need to transfer some of those skill sets over for how many players there are still for that game. But at the same time, I think I understand the listener's remark. I mean, sort of the sentiment of, I mean, here's Blizzard, this developer that arguably has more resources and more talent in a lot of ways than a lot of other developers, and they're using it to sort of just refine what exists instead of really reinventing the wheel, which they could do maybe better than anybody. But on that, I think what we've seen of their story mode, and backing up here, Dan, if you agree, is really exciting, and with what they're doing with that and making it, I want to call it like an adventure game like experience. Like you're in the ship, and
It's kind of a branching campaign.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to go play it next week, but so I can't talk about it too in depth right now because I haven't played it yet. But it's a much more open ended campaign than and dynamic campaign than it was initially. So they are doing some different things with the way they tell stories as opposed to the very linear campaign that they did the first time. So maybe the single player will be a little bit more ambitious to the caller's taste. But I'm actually surprised to hear that he didn't think the art was impressive. I think Blizzard does a fantastic job with art. And we did a story a few months ago about showcasing the up-to-date versions of some of the Zerg models that they have in there, some of the unit models, and the detail on those is just really, really impressive. So, and they actually look slimy. They've got all the little claws and everything, very, very finely detailed. And that's stuff that you won't even really see unless you zoom way in. So, but I guess, graphical style is a very subjective thing. So it's not going to be for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, art-wise, what I value about StarCraft II is the detail they put into making the units recognizable at first glance and making their capabilities sort of understandable to the average player. I wish I could give a better example, but that's how it strikes me.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at a unit and you have a general idea what it does. And that's particularly difficult with something like the Zerg, where they are intended to be so alien. And I think they do a very good job of it. A lot of attention is put into in unit design. A lot of attention is focused on the silhouette of the unit. Not even so much the detail of the unit, but making sure that just glancing at it, just seeing the basic shape, you can identify that unit easily. It's distinct from everything else, and you know what it does. So,
yep, that's that idea of the silhouette is something Valve values a whole lot in Left 4 Dead and Team Fortress as well.
Hey, PC Gamer, quick question: how awesome would it be if Demigod received updates like Team Fortress 2 for each character? And a discussion on maybe what you guys would like to see and where you would like to see the characters go as far as being updated. And where's Kristen? I haven't heard from her in a long time. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Oh, but does he have some bad news coming?
Well, no, it's not bad news. Kristen is our publisher now, so she's way too busy to podcast, basically. For Demigod, they are going to be getting some updates in patches. They've been talking about doing they're not planning to update the classes like they do in, or the characters like they do the classes in Team Fortress, but they're planning to add more characters, and potentially more maps. So, hold tight and they'll do that. I don't think it would work very well. I'm actually very impressed that Valve has been able to do what they've been able to do, without totally unbalancing the game. I think that,
well, there's argument. There's people that definitely think that certain things are unbalanced.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there's always people that think that certain things are unbalanced. I'm sure Valve has a huge database of statistics that prove otherwise, or if not, they're working to solve those. I don't think that Gas Powered is a relatively small developer, especially compared to Valve, they're still not huge, they've got a lot of resources that GPG just doesn't have. So I don't see them really having the ability to do that. I mean, they have the talent, but they don't have the time. So it's a matter of that takes a lot of very intensive balancing work that takes a long time, a lot of man hours to do. I don't think it's going to happen.
And considering how well, I feel Demigod is well balanced. I mean, other than the Queen of Thorns, which is kind of silly, but I won't get into that.
Seriously. Well, hey, I mean, the Queen of Thorns, if you look at the statistics pages, she wins the fewest number of matches. So, I mean, and yet she's very frustrating with that Bramble Shield. Drives you crazy.
Yeah, it's a correlation, but at the same time, it's interesting the way people are responding to, I mean, Team Fortress 2 and the precedent it has set for free content and for, I mean, the way I think of their updates, and they've echoed this in a recent interview we did in our August issue, is that they like forcing people out of their comfort zones. I mean, people get used to relying on the same weapons and the same tactics and the same maneuvers, and you know, suddenly they're introducing these new parts and these new pieces to the puzzle, and you have to counter them or accept them or embrace them by trying them out. And part of what this guy is saying, I think, is he likes the idea of a more dynamic multiplayer environment, maybe.
Right, and adding new demigods to Demigod would have that same effect, because you'd have to learn to counter entirely different attacks, different combinations of powers. It's just not quite as disruptive, I don't think.
I agree.
And changing any one power can disrupt the entire game. It could make a character worthless, or it could make them way overpowered unless you get it just right. So adding a different character lets you meddle with that in its own little, you know, kind of isolated from everything else. Try and weave that into the existing balance. Whereas adding new powers to an existing character upsets the balance that exists.
Hey guys, I just wanted to touch on this Left 4 Dead 2 stuff. Lots of people are whining that it's too soon, but I think most people are just jumping on the bandwagon. They're not really thinking about this. You know, the only reason people are upset is because there's a number in the title, and I'm willing to bet the word standalone expansion would have been a much easier pill to swallow than the number 2. You know, if Valve announced they'd be adding downloadable content, 4 new characters, melee weapons, campaigns, weather, people would have soiled themselves in joy. And you only play one map at a time anyway, so Left 4 Dead 2 maps launch from the same console as 1 maps, and it's just a matter of what experience you're looking for at the time. Poor marketing? Sure, but come on, people, this is a Valve game. They're not going to split the community. Calm down, get excited, mark your calendars. Thanks very much, PC Gamer.
I want to add...
I cannot argue with that.
A voice of reason.
I want to add to his thing, though. One of the reasons, I think, and this is only speaking for myself, is I was like, WTFing about the announcement was, if they're going to make an announcement, why isn't it about something that is like, you know, Episode 3 or Portal 2?
Oh, Andy. No,
I can't bring that in.
Hey, like listen,
why does
like,
it matter?
It doesn't, but at the same time, it's like, okay. I'm still playing Left 4 Dead. It's so fresh. I don't really need new.
This is how things work at Valve. Anybody that works for Valve can decide what project they work on. All right, so Kim Swift, co-creator of Portal 2, she's working on Left 4 Dead 2. So there isn't this idea of a big general pool of resources and people that can just be picked up and thrown at whatever project they want. You know, it's they get to choose, you know, specific development. It's usually that way at other developers too.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that Valve has more than one development team.
Of course.
So you don't have to worry that they've stopped work on other games.
And the fact of the matter is, Left 4 Dead 2 does look like a really good, you know, addition to the title, and I'm totally looking forward to it.
Right. And the thing that people were freaking out the most about, at least that I interpreted, was that they were being charged for what they felt they were entitled to in the form of, you know, extra campaigns. Which I don't know if Valve ever actually promised new campaigns. Yeah, they never promised new campaigns. They promised new modes. They promised new weapons, which they haven't delivered yet, but they still very well may. I mean, until like they stop updating Left 4 Dead 1, it's ridiculous to say you're not going to support that anymore.
Gabe Newell himself, you know, in late 2008, before the game came out, they were saying, okay, yeah, Team Fortress 2, this is the way to build a community. Like we were just talking about a few minutes ago, you know, we're going to introduce new content over time. It's going to be great. And, you know, they changed plans, and that should be okay. I mean,
no, it is okay. It is okay.
Well, they haven't changed plans, though. They are still introducing new content.
Yeah. So I think what really gets me with the boycott group for Left 4 Dead is, which has 32,685 members as of this afternoon, by the way, it's just the kind of rhetoric they're presenting. I mean, they describe their own demands basically as a manifesto. They've recorded podcasts about it. They have a dedicated forum for it, and they're like just using this language about like spreading their message. It's like,
Really? I didn't know it was that getting that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really
serious.
It just kind of buys, for me, it's just these people that are buying into this kind of message board culture where evaluating something the instant it's talked about or released or there's a screenshot for it, like, somehow puts you in touch with what the reality of it is. And that's really not the case. Like, just wait until a beta or a demo or you can play it. Like, they've barely shown two of the five campaigns and they've only announced one special infected, like, and they're really just hardly, like, harshly judging that there isn't enough content to justify a full game, and yet they haven't shown everything yet. So just, you know, be patient and keep a keen head, you know?
The thing that blows my mind is just how much effort they're putting into hating on it. I mean, I understand not buying something if you don't like it, but, I mean, starting a forum and a group and really? You don't have, I mean, you couldn't go play a game at that time? I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if I've used this line before, but you know Dan Amrick, Andy. He's a staff member at Official Xbox, and he uses this line sometimes, like, nobody hates their own hobby more than gamers do. Nobody loves to hate their own hobby more than gamers. It's just like these people are committed to hating fun to some extent. You know, like, there's... I wandered into their chat room one day sort of to research an article we're writing on it for our September issue, and you just could not convince these people otherwise, like, with just basic rational thinking. It's amazing.
Yeah, and they just feel so offended by it, which I don't really understand.
I mean, just to some extent, it shows, like, a heavy level investment in Left 4 Dead, which is, you know, a positive thing for Valve and for the community, because it is a good community. But it's just the wrong way of expressing yourself, you know?
I wish, anyway, that there is a means for Valve to track the people that belong to that group. How many of them end up buying Left 4 Dead 2? I think that would be a very funny number.
Absolutely.
One of the, just sorry to summarize something that I remember hearing of all the interviews that various outlets did with Chet Falasek. And the best point, I thought, for sort of, you know, because everybody was sort of maybe expecting a new campaign from the original Left 4 Dead. But the problem, he said, and I never really thought of it, is that they already used the core characters in practically every setting they could in the Northeast, or the Northwest, excuse me, because that's where they were. Like, it would be super strange to take Zoe, Bill, Francis, I don't remember the other guy's name, no.
Lewis,
gosh. And they put them in Louisiana, you know? That wouldn't make any sense at all. So basically, they already exhausted everything they could do with the setting in the Left 4 Dead 1. And to do all these new ideas, they completely had to revamp, you know, everything. And they might as well just do a whole new game involving all this very, very new stuff.
Well, I think they could have come up with a new setting in the Northwest. I mean, there are more than four settings in the Northwest. You know,
are there? Are there?
I'm pretty sure that a quarter of the time spent in the Northwest is not spent in a hospital, for example.
Or it could have been like it was Zoe's dream, and then she wakes up and you're actually in the South.
Yeah.
Like all those, you know.
It sounds to me like they had a bunch of good ideas. They wanted to do them, but it wouldn't fit in with the existing characters and setting.
It's true. I mean, there's a lot of people in this group that are saying, well, oh, dynamic weather system, that's cool. Melee weapons, big deal. Why, you can just put that in the first game. Well, not necessarily. Like, there's a lot of subtlety involved in level design and balancing. Like, if you give a character an axe in, you know, the first level of No Mercy, it might kind of unbalance, like, certain choke points and doorways and crescendo events. Like, these levels were designed specifically with the existing tools and materials in mind. Like, you got to understand that.
Well, I mean, more than that is that the levels were designed, you know, without things like dynamic lighting involved. So they were using static lighting, which means they would basically have to redesign the entire level. And from a mechanical standpoint, I mean, the structures are all where they are, but there's a lot of work that goes into lighting those things correctly. Oh, so
did I say lighting? I meant dynamic weather.
Well, the weather is part, you know, weather, yeah. And lighting is part of that. So
exactly, so especially if, I mean, a lot of the stages in the first game are indoors too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just a bizarre sense of entitlement. I mean, you paid for what you got, and you're getting a little bit more on top of that. They're putting out updates, and now they're putting out another thing. I do think he was right that it was poor marketing. I think that Valve kind of made a misstep by calling it Left 4 Dead 2. they should have either subtitled it or maybe called it Left 4 Dead Part 2, something like that. I think calling it Left 4 Dead 2, just solely based on the fact that it's a Valve title. When people think of what Valve has done with sequels in the past, this is not what you think of as a Valve sequel.
Yeah, and on that note, I guess I'd encourage people to just give them an opportunity to try something new. I mean, they're being aggressive with a very successful game. They've tried episodic gaming. They've tried, you know, smaller games in Portal. They've tried free content updates in Team Fortress 2. Like, just give them a chance. You know, you can evaluate all you want November 17th and thereafter.
Anyway, let's move on to some playlists before we get too many angry calls from people who hate Left 4 Dead 2. Andy, what are you playing?
Unfortunately, I haven't been playing that much. I've been playing through Red Alert 3. Was previous. I finally got through all the way the Soviet campaign, and proceeded
a third of the way.
Yeah, and then proceeded to look up tons of behind the scenes videos. I just wanted to see sort of how they shot it and stuff, because I'm interested in that.
You were looking up the videos of the hot chicks, weren't you?
No, I just wanted to see how they were doing a lot of the production.
That's what the I'm sure you were.
Oh, I bought Prototype off Steam, but I haven't even freaking played it yet.
Oh, loser!
I know.
It's awesome.
I was talking to Norm, who's on vacation this week, out of the office, and he was playing some Prototype and some Wolverine.
Two Origins very spiky games.
Right. He's saying he's liking Wolverine more. I don't know. I haven't tried Prototype yet either. I did enjoy Wolverine though. So, ignoring the terrible, terrible plot.
And you obviously, Norm's hysterical.
And you played it on PC?
Wolverine, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I didn't realize that was out on PC.
Yep. It actually behaves very well on PC. Logan, what are you playing?
I finally got GTA 4 running just fine on my PC. I mean, it took unbelievable amount of time, but now it runs beautifully, has not crashed once, and I'm just sort of hitting my stride. But I actually put it down all the time to finish my second run through of Prototype, which I just think is awesome.
That's got to be like an interesting
cutting people in half,
like juxtaposition, going from Prototype to GTA back and forth.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is. It's you get to you. I mean, I just like Prototype better, really. You get to, you know, yeah, sure, you have this dazzling, incredibly lifelike city in GTA 4, but in Prototype, you just get to tear everybody to pieces. And you get
you're just using the right weapons in GTA, it sounds like.
Yeah, but you don't have a fist that turns into a whip that attaches to helicopters and drags you up to the helicopter, which you can hijack and throw everybody out, you know?
And eat the pilot.
Yes, eat the pilot. You don't have that in GTA 4.
No. Prototype seems to be like a game about Venom. It's like I don't know why they didn't just license Venom.
Yeah, it has Venom-y flavorings in it, you know, but it's more than that. So yeah, that's what I'm playing this month.
All right, Evan, how about you?
Well, before I mention what I'm playing, I just got this statement from the America's Armies folks about what's going on, and I wanted to share that with you guys. Begins as such.
Were they listening in to the call?
No.
Are they tapping us?
I had emailed them.
Oh, okay.
But also, they're listening in.
Yeah, twice. So it goes, the response from our community to the launch of America's Army 3 has been tremendous. At points during the day yesterday, we experienced over 20 million connections. Oh, wow. which affected the ability to download, install, and register to play the game. In addition, gameplay was affected by the stress on our servers. We are addressing these issues quickly as possible and expect that our players will be able to enjoy the full America's Army experience for years to come. So that's a lot of connections, guys.
Wow. Yeah, 20, I mean, like if they were bragging about 11 million before, 20 million in the first day, not too bad.
Holy free holy.
Congratulations.
No kidding. So we'll give them a few.
That's your tax money at work, folks.
We'll give them a few days to sort that stuff out, but thanks to Stacy over at America's Army PR for that. So what I've been playing, I'm pretty sure my most anticipated game this year is Arma 2. I've been watching these incredible, the game's already out in Germany and a couple other countries in Europe, and I've been watching these incredible videos of, you know, huge massive battles with 1500 AI and tanks and planes. I'll share them in the comments throughout the podcast. But I mean, as I've been getting really excited about that, I've gone back to Armor One and been playing with the mission editor and just creating my own little beach storming missions and fighting helicopters. And it's just, it's a blast. It reminds me of the amazing dichotomy that game creates between hyper-realism, where you're worried about bullet penetration and ballistics and being in position and whatnot, but then you get these situations where you just want to lay down 500 soldiers and gun them down in a helicopter, or put a machine gun on a sheep or something. Like, it's really fun in that sense, I guess, for me.
Yeah, and it looks very like the video I've seen of it. Like somebody was talking about how they had overclocked their quad core, core i7 to like 5 gigahertz or something, with putting bags of ice on the processor, getting enough CPU power to run a massive simulation with all these AI soldiers, and looking at the YouTube video, in the high definition, it just looks amazing. It looks like something you see on CNN, of an actual battle. The explosions and smoke in particular are amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of have to warn you guys, I'm not going to shut up about this game for the next few podcasts, but
Andy, prepare the mute button.
No, dude, I'm actually looking forward to this game too, just because of all the atmospheric stuff that they got promised, or at least that the previews have been showing.
I mean, just okay, you see a plane go down, you see a bullet whiz by in front of you, you see a tank get blown up, and just knowing that fidelity is captured within the environment, it's not scripted. The AI is just deciding to do these things by itself, and at any time it could just decide to kill you. Like, it's just a really fantastic space to be in.
I don't know if I like the AI being able to decide to kill me whenever it wants.
Well, it's to kill.
Too much like life.
If it helps you, the AI is pretty dumb, I guess, but that's okay.
What's the word on its official release?
It's out on Steam the 26th of June. And will be at most retailers in North America. They just got a distributor for it in North America. And I guess most people are saying it'll be out within the next week or so at Best Buy and places of that nature.
Right. And Max, how about you? What are you playing?
Well, since I just got the internet, big computer turned on back home, I haven't been playing too much. I'm sitting on top of Far Cry 2 and Prototype, which I hope to get into more this weekend.
Now, I'll just start with Prototype so we can have a little more lively conversation about that. You missed the Far Cry conversation.
I'm a bit late to the party on that one.
Andy's been going on about Far Cry 2 for a while now.
It's not much of a party.
Oh.
No, but it's
last time you said you liked it.
It is good. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
It's not the rager. It's not the kegger you're hoping for.
So many mixed messages.
It's just a casual get-together, then.
It's a soiree.
But besides that, I found this website called Parchment, parchment.toolness.com.
Sounds like the worst porn site ever.
I know. Which hosts several interactive fiction titles, including one called Isle, An Instant in the Life of a Man by Sam Barlow. And in this game, you're allowed to only make one move. Your move will then play out the rest of the story and end the game. And so the setup is you're this guy, and you're standing in the pasta aisle of your local grocery store, and there's only one other person in the aisle, a brunette woman, who's buying some pasta sauce. And then, like I said, you're allowed to make one move, and the multitude of different actions you can take is kind of staggering. You can try to attack the woman, or you can try to just talk to her and ask her out. You can try to steal things from the grocery store. You can have a panic attack. You can leave. You can try to rob the store. Just like anything you can think of, it has a little story and it has a little ending for it. And as you go through and do all these different endings and get all these different conclusions, you start to piece together what's happened to this guy leading up to this point. And now he used to have a wife or a girlfriend and they split up. And now he's starting to slowly go insane. And it was just very high concept and very entertaining. And it doesn't take too long to play because you can only make one move.
I don't think I ever felt so closed-minded as I do now.
Why? Because you have no desire to play that?
Oh.
It's just...
But, and then there's that, and I finished Plants vs. Zombies. So I started it on my second playthrough of that.
See, me, I just played through Fallout 3's latest almost released DLC. It's Point Lookout, which I guess I probably shouldn't talk about until it comes out. So I'll wait on that one. But yeah, it's I actually haven't had too much time to play because I just got back from my honeymoon, so I wasn't allowed to play video games there. So so I'll reserve that for next week.
Don't be a gamer. Before we go, I'm cutting in with this announcement because we forgot to do it during the regular record time of the podcast. So you're going to have to just spare a little bit of time. Bear with me here. And I'm going to need some serious reverb for this. So here we go. Tonight at 7:30 p.m. Pacific, which is probably after you're already listening to this because the podcast goes up just a little bit before that, we will be playing Team Fortress 2 again. By we, I mean Evan and Max and maybe Josh and maybe Norm from PC Gamer and Max from PC and people from around the offices with everybody on the server. So, please join them and I'll be there too if anyone, you can see how much of a care bear I am. The server IP is 66.151.138.34:27015. Now, back to the show.
For all of us here, we have to get back to finishing our magazine. I guess we've got about 24 hours to do that. So, we're going to get back to it. So, for Logan Decker, Evan Lottie, Max McGee, and Andy Bauman, I'm Dan Stapleton. We'll see you guys next week. Please go to PCGamer.com and sign up for the podcast or sign up for the magazine. You can contact the podcast and leave us a message at the number Andy will read now.
1-877-404-1337, extension 724.
God, you're good at that. All right. Bye, everybody. That was not a good sound, Andy. not a confidence-inspiring sound.
Cut the tension with a knife.
Ooh, Wild West Pinball is free, by the way, on the iPhone, which is awesome. Physics are really good.
This one sounds good.
Yeah, I prefer to hear a f***ing question.
Oh, whoa.
Snap.